Welcome to Buffalo Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:30 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is April 4th. I thought we'd kick off with the U.S. job openings because they surprised on the downside. So there's a couple of different things I think worthy of consideration. Very clearly, first is that this is a top. So we have a lower high, we have a lower low, and certainly a very overextended advance, so clear acceleration of the prior trend, and now it's over. So that's very clear. Now, of course, we could argue that the job openings haven't been around for that long, and the predictive power isn't all that compelling. But it does, I think, stand to reason that before companies start firing people, they stop advertising for new jobs. So the fact that we're seeing a meaningful decline here in job openings, down from about 12 million to less than 10 million now, that's 2 million jobs that aren't available over the last year, that's a significant number. And it suggests that we should anticipate that unemployment rates will begin to rise in due course. Of course, what that also implies is that deflation is more likely than inflation. If people start losing their jobs, their spending power goes down, demand of the economy starts to recede, and bond yields should start to come back down, and they are. So the 10-year yield is coming back down through the 3.5% level. It is now clearly back below the 200-day moving average. I've been very much of the opinion that a reversion to the 1,000-day moving average is the most likely scenario. Now, that is now around 2.38%, which would imply at least another 100 basis points of contraction. But that's assuming that that's as far as the decline goes. I believe that it is more likely than not we're going to have a deflationary shock, and that will then weigh on asset prices more generally. It would support bond prices. One of the primary reasons why we've had such a profound run-up in bond yields, where the lows in 2020 were less than 50 basis points, and by the time we got to the end of last year, we were up to a yield of about 4.25 or 4.3. A lot of that was because there was a real fear of inflation, and then the knock-on effect being that interest rates had to go up aggressively to try and combat it. So any threat of deflation is likely to be a clear bullish phenomenon for the long end of the curve. So that's exactly what we're seeing right now. Now, if we switch it around and simply look at price, well, the TLT ETF is bouncing. Now, it has not quite yet pushed up through the 200-day moving average, but I think that there is clear potential that it will break the 3-year downtrend and then subsequently at least unwind the oversold condition relative to that 1,000-day moving average, which suggests that there is about 20% of upside that hasn't yet taken place. Now, when we think about deflationary forces, well, that also implies that interest rates are not going to stay high for long. And the dollar is now beginning to price that in. So the dollar was in dynamically lower on the dollar index in here today. Look at it the other way around. The pound is popping on the upside. It got all the way up to test the 125 area in here today. Now, technically, that is a breakout. It is the highest level we've seen in about a year. Now, of course, the next question is, will it sustain the move? But we're seeing more currencies appreciating versus the dollar. The primary tailwind for the dollar over the last year and more has been the trajectory of interest rates. As that ebbs and the interest rate differential narrows, as Europe and the UK in particular continue to raise rates, then that's likely to act as a tailwind for the euro and the pound. But then we have currencies that already have higher interest rates than the USA. So the Mexican peso was actually a little bit softer today, but it has been trending higher for 3 years versus the dollar. And then the Brazilian real still has this outstanding question about when are they going to eventually begin to cut their rates. And the real was a little bit softer in here today. Now, why might that be? Well, we had the big pop on the upside for oil yesterday, and it held the advance today but did not follow through on the upside. It is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs. Now, OPEC has been granted a lot of power over the last 18 months because the conventional or the non-OPEC part of the market has been restricted in how much money they can spend on new supply because of the ESG challenge. And that has then lent greater control of the market to OPEC. And they've decided that they're going to try and sustain prices somewhere around $90. And we're not that far away from it right now. But at the same time, this higher price environment is also likely to act as a tailwind to those deflationary forces over the medium term. So higher oil prices emphasize inflation in the short term, deflation in the medium term, simply because it's a tax on consumption. And I think then with the weaker dollar, gold prices are clearly the hedge. So gold surged higher today, clearing the 2000 level in very emphatic fashion. So this is a clear breakout. Now, one thing I think is worth highlighting is that every time it got up to these levels in the past, it came straight back down again. But I do think it is better supported on this occasion. And there is a clearer trend of underperformance by the dollar to support gold. And certainly, when we think about the performance of gold in other currencies, well, the pound might have been strong today, but it wasn't quite as strong as gold. So gold was up £18. And this looks like a very clear breakout. And the thing to, I think, is to emphasize most is gold tends to put in its big advances in short periods of time, and most of the rest of the time it spends ranging in a maddeningly volatile environment. So the times when it breaks out, it can really run. Now, silver prices were up almost a dollar in here today, and well, actually in excess of a dollar. Now that has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So there's certainly the potential here that we have a short-term overbought condition and we might get some consolidation. But silver has been lagging gold by a significant margin. And that's generally not what one would expect. After a very lengthy period of underperformance, silver isn't the first one generally to go, but it does play catch up. Now we have a higher reaction low versus gold on that ratio. If we are in a new medium to secular long period of outperformance by gold relative or by of precious metals, silver should outperform gold. And that would imply that it is going to break out and that we'll see the very we've already seen the break of this long downtrend. This has been a very lengthy period of consolidation, 3 years, and it should then contribute to silver outperforming by a really wide margin. And that would imply then that a doubling of silver is at the base case. In other words, it will at least get back up to test the peaks from 2011. Now, platinum prices are also now pushing up through the $1,000 level. Now, there have been several occasions over the last decade when it has done that and they've all failed. But with gold and silver now breaking downtrends and pushing up out of ranges, well, then that's certainly raising the potential that platinum will do the same. And the one thing that has been missing from platinum for the last decade really has been a key industrial use. With the end of diesel vehicles, or the significant downtrend in diesel vehicle production, then it's been bereft of a clear bullish bias. So now the next question is, are we going to see that the platinum price will benefit from hydrogen fuel cells, as it's the primary catalyst for that particular portion of the supply complex. Now, when we think about the renewable energy sector, I thought it was interesting that copper is starting to roll over, and that is, I think, very clearly highlighting that we're not quite out of the woods yet in terms of the clear question about whether global demand or I guess the whether global demand will sustain the market, or whether the new supply that's coming online will actually come in ahead of the jump in demand from renewable energy and from the EV sector. And I think that what we can anticipate with copper is a great deal of volatility. And the price pulling back down through the $4 area, it's right now in the region of where, if support is to be found, this is exactly where that needs to take place. Now let's then think about stock markets. There's two ways of looking at what we're seeing right now. The first is that inflationary pressures are coming down. That's great news because interest rates will come down and we can go back to the very benign environment that's been in place for the technology sector. And the Nasdaq, having now rallied sufficiently to break its succession of lower rally highs, is in a new bull market environment. And I think it is rather funny that people are saying, particularly the talking heads on financial media, saying that when the market falls 20%, it's a bear market. When it goes up 20%, it's a bull market. That makes no sense whatsoever. In order for us to go back into the benign liquidity-fueled environment that has predominated since 2009, we're going to have to see a really big move in terms of money supply growth. And we're not quite there yet. So the Nasdaq's a little bit overbought in the short term. And corporate earnings are already starting to get pegged back. And then on top of that, economic growth is moderating. And the PMI figures in a whole swathe of the global economy are rolling over. So that's not really supportive of the view that the economy is firing on all cylinders. And one of the graphics I'm going to post in comment of the day today is, I think, very instructive, that the number of vehicles sold per annum has been in a clear downtrend for about 5 years. And the cost of owning a vehicle, whether it is the cost of buying it, which has gone up about 60% since 2012, whether it is all of the additional compliance one has to do, or the road tax one has to pay, and then the clear trend towards trying to force people to buy electric vehicles, which generally tend to be more expensive anyway. And then insurance costs continue to rise as well. Well, all of that is contributing to a significant downtrend in living standards. It's making it more expensive, more difficult to own a vehicle. And when we think about the populist responses that we're starting to see, and that have been really predominating since the end of the credit crisis, it does beg the question how they can possibly stop printing money. Because obviously, printing money is the symptom for this loss of living standards for people. But the kind of reset that would be required in order to improve the overall situation would require a really steep decline in living standards in the short term. And I don't think anybody has an appetite for that. So I think the Nasdaq is certainly susceptible to additional weakness here. And the companies that are most likely to be at the forefront are the ones that have been viewed as safe havens. So Microsoft was a tad weaker in here today. It's got a very similar pattern to the Nasdaq overall. It has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. Earnings are going to be next week. Now they've spent a ton of money on artificial intelligence. And some people are already starting to talk about the potential for all this investment that's going into artificial intelligence to create general artificial intelligence, which would be almost akin to a conscious state for a computer program. Now, I personally think that that is more fiction than fact, but of course, that's not going to stop people from putting money to work, and Microsoft have certainly put some money to work in that. But that doesn't mean that the primary set of revenue, which is from commercial sales, is going to sustain through an environment where lots of companies are downsizing. Now, when we then think about the wider global markets, well, the FTSE 250 has rebounded from the region of 18,000. Now, this is much more keenly reflective of the UK economy, and I think that it is underperforming at present relative to the FTSE 100. But the FTSE 100 is an international index. Most of the earnings come from overseas. Well, when they're redenominated into a strengthening pound, that would suggest that it is probably more the mid cap will do better than the large cap going forward. Now, it's a fairly similar environment for the Eurozone. Most of the Eurozone markets are major exporters, so we're going to have to see a big uptick in demand and then strength in the Eurozone economy in order to sustain the continued outperformance here. Where I think we have clearer potential is in those higher growth markets, where clear domestic growth will push up the currency, make it more attractive, and that the earnings growth will outweigh the appreciation of the currency. And that's probably less of a factor for Europe, which is heavily dependent on global growth. And then I think when we think about the Indonesian market or the Mexican market, they're clear beneficiaries of reshoring, and they're likely to benefit over the medium term. But the Wall Street leash effect is still there. And if the US economy slows down, then we do have to have a changing of the guard. So there will first be a decline, and then we'll see subsequent outperformance. And I think that's basically what we should anticipate. And US banks remain weak. So the S&P 500 banks index was in negative territory in here today. Now, this is the weekly chart that we're looking at right now. And I think the most important thing is that the rebound that we've seen so far is pretty muted. And it does look likely that the path of least resistance will be on the downside. And the losses that are sitting on bank balance sheets will certainly be ameliorated by the long end of the curve starting to contract. But the way that banking sectors are generally bailed out is via the yield curve. And when you have a very steep yield curve up around 250 basis points, well, that's generally the low in the market. And that's also a time when banks really can make a return because they're borrowing short and lending long. But We're really only at the beginning of this process. So I think it would be putting the cart before the horse to become super bullish at this stage, because we haven't gone through the recession yet, and we haven't gone through the interest rate cutting in response to sharply deflationary forces. And of course, that is also one of the reasons why the volume of cash in money markets is currently in excess of 5 trillion. So a lot of money is getting siphoned out of the market at the same time that some of the technology sector stocks are still rallying. So that also means that if the money is coming out into money markets and going into, and of course also going into gold, but also supporting those exceptionally large cap companies, well, then it's not going into other assets. And that's also one of the reasons why breadth in the market hasn't been as compelling. So we do have short-term overbought conditions on stock markets. I think it is likely they're going to be unwound. The dollar looks like it's about to break on the downside, and that's exceptionally bullish for gold. And I think that the strength we've seen in oil is probably temporary, even if it goes higher in the short term. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.